content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, The People versus AI. Triangle communities push pause on data center development as tech firms look for future power. We'll start this week with the biz section, and then we'll read the reporter pages, and then the cover story. Biz, as always, is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Demand diverges in Outer Banks. Every January, reservations start pouring in for summer vacations on North Carolina's Outer Banks. The Outer Banks features roughly 10,000 rental homes, ranging from modest accommodations to massive homes in places such as Duck, with 10 bedrooms and more. In January, Lee Nettles, the executive director of the Outer Banks Visitors Bureau, starts to see the trends trickle in, an early snapshot of the summer season ahead. January is a prime booking time, so we get an indication of how the season is going to go, said Nettles, noting that some rental companies book 60% of their summer business in January. This season, he saw interest in the biggest houses go slightly up and interest in the smaller homes go slightly down. In other words, the discussions about a K-shaped economy with the wealthy getting wealthier and the lower incomes feeling more stress were playing out in reservations. Nettles calls it the bifurcation with the economy. Households at $100,000 plus are spending much like they have before, he said. As you work your way down, if I'm a 1 to 2 bedroom house away from the oceanfront, I can wait until closer to the day of travel. Nettles said the fact that smaller homes are not renting as fast could be a reflection of economic uncertainty or that there is still plenty of availability. In a way, it's not a huge surprise. The larger homes tend to be on the ocean, of course, so demand is intense. Given that, if you're needing to wait until May to book, you are likely to be out of luck. Nettles remains confident about the season ahead. I don't think it's time to sound the alarm, he said. People are just kind of waiting a little bit longer to make those decisions. Fuquay Bank makes leap to Georgia. A bank based in Fuquay Varina is targeting one of the most competitive banking markets in the Southeast with a $143 million acquisition. Fidelity Bank is buying Affinity Bank Shares of Georgia, a small business-focused bank that gives Fidelity an immediate foothold in Metro Atlanta. The combined organization will become a $5.5 billion bank with $4.6 billion in assets and $3.6 billion in loans. The deal gives Fidelity, which has 52 branches in North Carolina, two in South Carolina and one in Virginia, two new branches in Georgia. The deal is expected to close in the third quarter. Chris Marinac, director of research at Breen Capital, said the deal gives Fidelity access to a faster growth market and additional loan opportunities for its excess liquidity. At the end of last year, Fidelity reported $3.9 billion in deposits and approximately $2.8 billion in loans. Novant to build hospital in Brunswick County. Brunswick County's surging population will be adding a hospital. Novant Health has secured approval to build a hospital in the fastest-growing county in North Carolina. The Novant Health Leland Medical Center has a price tag of about $250 million, according to an application the health system filed with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services in October. Novant's coastal push comes as hospital systems are looking to expand their presences throughout the state in an increasingly competitive healthcare landscape. Novant, based in Winston-Salem, has also sought to expand its footprint in the Triangle, but has been rejected so far for hospitals here. In Portland, Dundon's purchase of NBA team approved. Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon just added a National Basketball Association franchise to his Easter basket. The NBA's Board of Governors approved the sale of the controlling interest in the Portland Trail Blazers to an investor group led by Dundon, the league said on March 29th. The deal is valued at more than $4 billion, according to reports. Other investors include Blue Owl Capital's Mark Zahr, Portland Collective Global's Sheil Tile, and the Cheung Family Trust, the co-founders of Panda Express. Dundon also wants a baseball team for Raleigh. And finally in biz, ouch, James Beard awards snub Triangle Chefs. Once again, the Triangle won't be bringing home any James Beard awards this year. The region had three semifinalists, but none of them were among the finalists, revealed March 31st. The Peregrine, which debuted last year at the Exchange Raleigh, was nominated for Best New Restaurant, while Chef Chidi Kumar of Asia and Stephen Devereaux Green of Herons at the Umstead Hotel were nominated in the Best Chef Southeast category. The first of the reporter pages is Real Estate and Development, and it is brought to us by Kaylee Thompson. Defense firm plans to add 100 jobs. A defense and technology company based in California is expanding with a permanent office in the Triangle. General Atomics Integrated Intelligence, Inc. of San Diego signed a lease for 25,293 square feet at Perimeter Park in Morrisville for its first Triangle office. The lease comes after building owner Capital and Ascendus REIT of Singapore performed upgrades to the lobby and outdoor patio at the Perimeter 1 office building at 3005 Carrington Mill Boulevard. The investment group updated the lobby by adding couches, tables, various workspaces, and a coffee bar. It also updated the outdoor patio by adding pergolas, lounge seating, tables, and refreshed landscaping. General Atomics' office will be on the fourth floor of the building. Gil Ness, Chief Operating Officer for General Atomics, said it will move 30 employees into the office with the goal of having 100 employees by the end of 2027. The company has a job listing for Associate Facilities Managers located in Morrisville, which has a listed salary range of $91,000 to $166,300. Ness cited the Triangle's growing talent pool and prestigious educational institutions as reasons for placing a permanent office here. The five-story office building near Highways 54 and 540 is on 14.59 acres and is assessed at $40.8 million. Upgrades have been made to other buildings, such as Perimeter 4, where Capital Land turned a vacated first-floor office space into an amenity space. Capital Land acquired Perimeter Park in 2018 for $314 million. Landlords that make upgrades have seen an increase in leasing. Since announcing a $10 million investment at Imperial Tower, Drawbridge Realty has signed three tenants. Chartwell Property Group plans a $10 million redevelopment of the 15-story Durham Center Tower, and Highwoods Properties added an amenity suite to its One City Plaza office building in Raleigh. A Raleigh home with a guest house lists for $5.5 million. A Raleigh mansion with a guest house just hit the market inside the Beltline. The 6,925-square-foot home in the Sunset Hills subdivision north of Wade Avenue is up for sale at $5.5 million. Including the detached guest house, the total square footage is 7,500 square feet. The guest house includes a kitchen with stainless steel appliances, full bathroom, half bathroom, living area, and a single-car garage. Listed by Christina Valkanoff with Christina Valkanoff Realty Group, the main house has four bedrooms, six bathrooms, and a three-car garage. There's also a media and bonus room that includes a bar with sink, refrigerator, dishwasher, and in-wall oven. The custom home is owned by Sammy and Andra Kinlaw, who bought the property in 2021, and had the home built by Lloyd Builders. The home is situated on 0.32 acres on Grant Avenue. The brick mansion was built in 2022 and is assessed at $3 million. Raleigh building sold for above assessed value. A fully leased office building in South Raleigh has been sold for nearly double its assessed value. JD and Capital of Connecticut acquired the building at 326 Tryon Road for $8.75 million per Wake County deed records. The building is occupied by Tower Engineering Professionals. The 30,535-square-foot building, built in 1975, is assessed at $4.6 million according to tax records. Tower Engineering's lease runs through April 2031, according to City of Raleigh records. Tower Engineering is based in Raleigh and has dozens of locations across the U.S. and Canada. The company has more than 1,400 employees. Jadian bought the building from Raleigh Property Group, LLC, which paid $7.5 million for it in 2021. And finally, in real estate and development, a builder in Cary seeks luxury homes with rooftop views. A site just outside downtown Cary has been tapped for a townhome project by a Raleigh custom home builder. Legacy Custom Homes filed site plans with the town of Cary for Middleton Place Townhomes, a collection of 19 homes on Middleton Avenue between the train tracks and Chapel Hill Road. The homes would be three stories with a rooftop terrace. Plans show each home would have four bedrooms and four bathrooms with a two-car garage, office, kitchen island, fireplace, and laundry room. The rooftop terrace would have either a storage closet or a wet bar. The project rendering looks similar to Legacy's, the O'Berry, a 22-unit condo-style community in the University Park neighborhood of Raleigh. The O'Berry homes start in the high 900,000s. Middleton Place townhomes will be on 2.59 acres across five parcels, 308, 317, 320, and 401 Middleton Avenue, and an unaddressed parcel. The site is mostly forested and is assessed at $1.9 million. Legacy Custom Homes owns all of the properties. The plan shows there will be 1.5 acres of open space. Upscale townhomes and condos in and around downtown Cary have become increasingly popular as the area grows. Silver Developers is planning to build 22 condos along East Chatham Street near Southeast Maynard Road. Ben Tobin brings us news from the Greater Triangle. In demographics, Brunswick leads the state's growth. Move over Wake and Mecklenburg counties. The North Carolina county seeing some of the fastest population growth in the nation is located on the coast. Brunswick County had the largest growth rate in the state between 2024 and 2025, according to estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau released March of 26. The county grew by 4.68% during the year leading up to July 2025. No other county in North Carolina had a growth rate above 3%. Wake and Mecklenburg were both above 2%. Pender County, which like Brunswick is part of the Wilmington metro area, was second statewide at 2.8%. Johnston County was third at 2.78%. Brunswick added 7,813 residents, bringing its population to just shy of 175,000. The county ranks number 7 in the nation when it comes to year-over-year growth rate. It trails Loving, Waller, and Kaufman counties in Texas, Jackson and Long counties in Georgia, and Jasper County in South Carolina. Brunswick also outpaced its 2023 to 2024 growth rate of 4.1%, which was also among the fastest growth rates in the country. The new figures highlight the continued population surge along North Carolina's coast, and Brunswick County's growth isn't expected to slow down anytime soon. Between now and 2060, the county is expected to gain around 135,000 residents, according to estimates from North Carolina State Demographer's Office. Thousands of new homes are being approved by county leaders in anticipation of this growth. Last year, Brunswick County officials approved 13,562 residential units across 31 different projects, according to a Triangle Business Journal analysis. So far this year, the county has approved more than 5,000 housing units. The biggest of those projects is Canopy, a 1,000-acre master plan community north of Calabash that calls for 3,700 age-restricted homes and 50 acres of commercial space. In Franklin County, Bunn Strip Mall sees value rise, sells for $3 million. A retail property in Franklin County has sold for roughly $1.5 million more than its previous price in 2021. Marion Properties 1, a Cary-based LLC, and Holder Commercial Ventures, a Mount Airy-based LLC, purchased the Bunn Crossing retail space at 23 North Carolina 98 in the Franklin County town of Bunn for $3.3 million this month, according to Franklin County deed records. The seller, Cary-based Bunn Crossing LLC, bought the 11,536-square-foot property in January 2021 for $1.85 million. The property is across from a Food Lion grocery store on the southeast side of town. Marion Properties 1 lists a Dean Marion as a member, and Holder Commercial Ventures lists a Samuel Holder Jr. as a member, according to North Carolina Secretary of State filings. Holder said they acquired the Bunn property as a long-term investment based on its position as a shadow anchor to Food Lion and its location within the expanding Raleigh growth corridor. Franklin County has been among the fastest-growing counties in North Carolina in recent years, while the broader Raleigh Metro continues to show strong annual growth year after year, Holder said. As that growth pushes outward, smaller communities like Bunn, already seeing strong population gains since 2020, are becoming logical next points of retail expansion. In Johnston County, Seven Brew eyes debut in North Carolina. A national coffee chain has its eyes on making its debut in the Triangle area. Seven Brew is going to have a new store off the 1200 block of North Brightleaf Boulevard in the town of Smithfield, representatives of the Arkansas-based chain confirmed. The location is under construction next to a Planet Fitness gym and a peach cobbler factory restaurant. Founded in 2017 in Rogers, Arkansas, Seven Brew has expanded across the United States with a drive-through focused coffee concept built around speed, customization, and a high-energy customer experience. The company is known for its extensive drink menu, offering more than 20,000 possible combinations, including specialty coffees, energy drinks, teas, smoothies, and flavored sodas. And finally, in the Greater Triangle, in Onslow County, Coastal Apartments sold for $58 million. A Greensboro residential real estate firm has once again spent tens of millions to acquire a luxury apartment community on the North Carolina coast. Two LLCs that list the Greensboro address of Hawthorne Residential Partners on the deed purchased the Evolve Holly Ridge apartment community off 1001 Victory Lap Lane in Holly Ridge for a little more than $58 million, according to Onslow County deed records. The property sits on a little less than 37 acres. The seller is Evolve Companies, a Greensboro real estate firm. The company acquired a luxury apartment community in the Craven County city of New Bern in November for $59 million. The recent deal reflects the growing attention investors are paying to coastal markets as population growth and in-migration accelerate. Communities near the coast have increasingly attracted multifamily investment as buyers look to capitalize on rising demand for rental housing. The news from the healthcare and higher education world is brought to us by Zach Ezone. Duke Health hires familiar face as new CEO. One of the Triangle's largest health systems has a new leader. Duke University has appointed Dr. David Zoss as the next CEO of its health system. Zoss, currently CEO and president of Atrium Health, Wake Forest Baptist, will step into the role on May 1st. The move marks a return to Durham for Zoss, who previously spent about two decades with Duke Health in various leadership roles, including as vice chair for the university's Department of Medicine, chief medical officer of the Duke Private Diagnostic Clinic, and president of Duke Raleigh Hospital. I'm honored to return to Duke and energized to lead Duke University Health System during this next phase of growth, Zoss said in a statement March 25th. Zoss is joining Duke after a recent promotion at Atrium Health, Wake Forest Baptist, part of Charlotte-based Advocate Health. In January, he took over the CEO role from Dr. Julianne Freischlag, who retired. He also has served as Executive Vice President for Clinical Health Affairs at Wake Forest University. At Duke, Zoss will be responsible for strategic and operational oversight of the health system and its leadership team. Zoss follows Dr. Craig Albanese, who left at the end of September for Kaiser Permanente in California. The move comes as Duke pushes to expand its reach in the Triangle and across North Carolina. The health system, which reported total operating revenue of $7.28 billion in fiscal year 2025, aims to become a $20 billion revenue system, according to a public bond filing last year. In the Triangle, Duke is investing in a growing medical campus in Cary. Last year, Duke closed on its acquisition of Lake Norman Regional Medical Center in Mooresville for $284 million. Duke is also working with UNC Health to develop North Carolina's first freestanding children's hospital in Apex. Last year, the health systems identified a 230-acre property within the Viridia development as the site for the multi-billion-dollar project. In the federal dollars, UNC and Duke up lobbying spending amid funding concerns. Duke and UNC Chapel Hill ramped up their federal lobbying spending in 2025 as universities nationwide scrambled to push back against potential cuts to research funding. Duke spent $1.48 million on lobbying in 2025, nearly double its 2024 figure of $784,000. The university increased spending on its in-house lobbying operations and brought on DLA Piper, which is headquartered in London with offices in Washington, D.C. The firm lobbied on behalf of the university and its health system, according to federal disclosure records. UNC also stepped up its lobbying spending, $1.25 million in 2025, up from $370,000 in 2024, according to federal filings. UNC hired DLA Piper in second quarter of 2024 to lobby for continued funding of its Pandemic Preparedness Research Center, one of nine nationwide, and remained a client through 2025. Despite the lobbying effort, funding for the federally supported antiviral drug discovery program ultimately ran out. UNC also hired a second outside firm, Checkmate Government Relations, which lobbied on the school's behalf throughout the year, according to federal filings. St. Augustine's has settled a lawsuit and added a fiscal partner. St. Augustine's University has settled a lawsuit against its accrediting agency over its standing within the organization. The university and the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges in February filed a motion to stay proceedings after agreeing in principle to settle the case. A judge administratively closed the case on February 20th, according to court documents. St. Augustine sued in August, claiming the agency acted arbitrarily, unreasonably, and unlawfully in its decision to remove the school from its membership. A judge ordered the accreditor to reinstate the university's membership as the lawsuit moved forward. Without accreditation, universities are unable to be in federal student aid programs. Court records do not include any terms of the settlement. Also, in 2024 semester, Durham's Gothic Ventures provided St. Augustine's with $7 million in financing with the potential for up to $30 million in total. The university put its real estate up to secure the loan. According to Wake County Property Records, Self-Help Ventures Fund, a nonprofit affiliate of Self-Help Credit Union in Durham, assumed a $7 million promissory note along with the associated mortgage and collateral in December from two Gothic-related entities. And the final reporter page is Retail and Restaurants, brought to us by Kate Tracy. Jubala Coffee adds North Hills Cafe. Jubala Coffee is brewing up a second North Hills location in addition to a larger roasting facility as the local business continues its jolt of growth in the Triangle. The coffee shop plans to open this year at 4114 Center at North Hills Street, located between Aloe Yoga and the jewelry store Gorgiana. Jubala owner Andrew Cash said he's been talking with Kane Realty Corp about a second location for a couple of years now. I was hesitant to open a second store in North Hills, but I think we've had so much success over there, and Kane has been great to work with. They're great partners, Cash said. Cash said the second North Hills outpost, and fifth overall, will help relieve the demand on Jubala's current North Hills location at 200 Park at North Hills Street, less than a mile away from its future shop in the main district. Jubala's current North Hills Cafe brings in the most revenue of any Jubala's location, Cash said. Jubala brought in approximately $10 million in 2025 revenue. The thing about the main district, it was always retail heavy, but when they made the switch to add all the residential and more office, it made a lot of sense for coffee to be over there, Cash said. The 2,300 square foot space in the main district will have ample room for outdoor seating that will activate the breezeway between the shop and Village Tavern, Restoration Hardware, and other retailers. Cash has been on a roll lately. In addition to a new Jubala and cocktail bar in downtown Raleigh, Cash is also one of the owners of Bench Warmer Bagels, which is opening soon in the North Hills Innovation District, and has joined Kane's Rockway Development. He's also one of the owners of Bright Spot Donuts at Five Points. Former SAS leader to open Cary Bookstore. An independent bookstore is joining the bustle of activity transforming downtown Cary. Marcy Montague, a former SAS leader and downtown Cary resident, will open Juliet Books and Beautiful Things in June at 200 Park Through Street. I want downtown Cary to really have a heart, and it can't only be eating and drinking establishments, she said. The store is going in the space formerly occupied by Tarts Barbershop on Chatham Street. Montague has spent her career in tech, working at SAS for more than 20 years. After leaving SAS, she worked at Single Store for 5 years, which was acquired last year by Vector Capital Management in a $500 million deal. She's using her stock buyout to open a bookstore. You can do a lot of things with money. You can stick it in the bank and then you die. You can go to Las Vegas and gamble it, or you can do something that you've always wanted to do, she said. I thought even if I lost every penny, which I do not plan on, and I don't think that I will still be happy that I took the risk and did it. Montague named her store after Juliet Capulet from William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. craft brewers close tap rooms in tough times. Two more Triangle breweries have closed their tap rooms as the craft beer industry continues to be rattled by higher costs and changing consumer habits. Fun Guys Brewing in Raleigh announced March 27th on social media that its tap room at 2408 Paula Street has closed for good. Meanwhile, Proximity Brewing the same day announced it is closing its tap room at 401 East Driver Street in East Durham, effective immediately. This was not an easy choice, but due to ongoing challenges and the realities of high operating costs, it's a necessary step for us to move forward in a more sustainable way, Proximity posted on Instagram. Proximity and Fun Guys are just the latest in a string of taproom and brewery closures the Triangle has seen as the industry reckons with high costs, tight competition, and changing tastes. Flying Bull Beer Company closed its taprooms this month on Durham's 9th Street, while Vicious Fish's Brewery closed locations in Fuquay Varina and Apex late last year. Elsewhere, Cotton House Craft Brewers in Cary closed last year, as did Havoc Brewing Company in Pittsburgh. Proximity said it will focus on selling wholesale. The brewery opened in December 2023. Mike Potter is its founder and co-owner. Fun Guys Brewing, owned by Carly and Nick Brango, said its products will remain available at bottle shops, bars, and restaurants. The Brangos opened Fun Guys in April 2018 and held their wedding at the brewery 6 months later. Our cover story this week concerns the data center arms race. It's a two-parter this week. The first part is entitled Moratorium Conundrum. Investors see opportunities in the coming wave of data centers, but some communities are not convinced. This part is written by Ben Tobin. Kirk Bradley has already invested millions preparing a 400-plus acre heavy industrial site in Chatham County for a potential data center project. Now those plans could be on hold. In February, the Chatham County Board of Commissioners voted to enact a year-long moratorium on granting permits for data center development, a move that blindsided Bradley. The president and CEO of Lee Moore Capital asked the county for an exemption from the moratorium, which temporarily halts new approvals as officials consider how to regulate the fast-growing industry. The county rejected his request, he said, and we're going to pursue all remedies available to us. There was no communication on the moratorium, Bradley said. It felt like a very rushed process, personally. During a Chatham Chamber of Commerce meeting on March 24th, Chatham County Commissioner Lisa Howard said, "I have to stress the importance of the fact that it is a temporary moratorium. The best thing a local government can do is to start out right," she said. "You cannot go back and retrofit your regulations and ordinances around these kinds of industries. We've seen the mistakes that have happened in other communities. We have an opportunity to learn from them, to look at what other communities have since done that has made data processing not just a financial benefit to their communities, because we know that there is a financial gain, but also to mitigate the negative impacts on the communities." Chatham's move comes as communities are weighing the need for such facilities and whether to allow them in their backyards. Demand for data centers fueled by the rapid rise of artificial intelligence is accelerating across North Carolina, drawing interest from developers and hyperscale users alike. But as proposals multiply, a growing number of counties are pushing back with temporary moratoria and new regulations as they grapple with rising demands on land, water, and energy infrastructure. The result is a clash between economic development ambitions and local governments racing to put guardrails in place, one that is increasingly shaping how data center projects move forward. A hyperscale data center typically brings in over $1 billion of investment, though it produces fewer jobs than a traditional manufacturer. Water used by data centers can reach millions of gallons per day, particularly during peak cooling periods, which is the equivalent of what a combined thousands of households use per day. Data centers have already caused controversy in some North Carolina places. In Tarboro, a developer has sued the Edgecombe County town after its town council rejected a special use permit for a $6.4 billion project. And last month, Microsoft announced that it will build a data center at the 1,350-acre Person County Megapark. At least five North Carolina governments have passed temporary data center moratoria in recent months, according to Triangle Business Journal research. Chatham County, Gates County, Boone, Canton, and Kings Mountain. At least three others are discussing similar measures: Apex, Lee County, and Orange County. And at least one county, Clay County in the mountains, has passed an ordinance prohibiting commercial data centers from operating in the county, with a few exceptions. Developers such as Bradley argue that moratoria are unnecessary and in an emerging industry where time is money can create significant financial risk through lost opportunity. Meanwhile, proponents of moratoria say the pauses give communities time to catch up with the rapidly evolving and largely unregulated industry. A moratorium gives communities time to get this right before projects move faster than the rules, said Brooks Rainey, a lobbyist with the Southern Environmental Law Center. These are massive facilities with long-term impacts, and many local governments are still figuring out how to regulate them responsibly. What's driving the pushback? The concept of a moratorium is not new in North Carolina. Counties and municipalities across the state have previously enacted temporary pauses on development due to constraints on water and sewer capacity. According to Adam Lovelady, a professor at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Government, North Carolina statutory law requires the local government to be clear about why the moratorium is necessary, as well as when and how the issues will be resolved. Some projects, like those with a valid building permit or those for which substantial expenditures have already been made in good faith reliance on a prior valid development proposal, may be exempt, per Lovelady. Local officials say the recent push for moratoria reflects how quickly the data center industry has evolved, often outpacing the zoning rules meant to govern it. Large-scale facilities can require vast amounts of electricity and water, raising questions about grid capacity, environmental impact, and long-term land use that many communities have not yet fully addressed. In response, some counties are opting to temporarily pause approvals while they study those impacts and draft more tailored regulations. In December, Gates County in northeast North Carolina became one of the first in the state to enact a data center-specific moratorium. The one-year pause is intended to give officials time to study potential impacts, draft land use ordinance amendments and performance standards, hold public workshops and planning board meetings, and potentially adopt new regulations. Emily Truman, chair of the Gates County Board of Commissioners, said the moratorium is not meant to be an immediate no to data centers. Instead, it is intended to give the county time to prepare, particularly as it has already received specific inquiries about Gates County's possible interest in a data center. We genuinely don't know enough about them at this point. We didn't have anything in place, and we knew that they were going to have a pull on water and electricity and just different things that were not super abundant, Truman said. Truman described Gates County as a resource desert, citing limited water infrastructure, a lack of hospital, and a few grocery options. That scarcity, she said, makes counties like Gates more vulnerable when seeking funding opportunities without the correct due diligence and investigation of how it's going to affect your community in the long run. Although she said she isn't outright opposed to data centers, Truman wants something that Gates County residents will support. We do know that economic development is important, but we feel that it has to fit the heart of our county as well, she said. We can't lose ourselves just for the sake of economic development industry that isn't a fit for our community. When Rainey of the Southern Environmental Law Center spoke at the Lee County Board of Commissioners meeting in Sanford on March 16th, she was surprised and impressed with the turnout, as the main board chambers and an overflow room were packed, she said. During the meeting, Rainey spoke to the benefits of data center moratoria and why Lee County should adopt one. Jimmy Randolph, president and CEO of the Public-Private Sanford Area Growth Alliance, followed her and highlighted the potential economic impacts of data centers. In many ways, data centers are simply another type of modern industrial facility, Randolph said during the meeting. A modern data center can fit well within Lee County's economic development strategy. Many speakers during public comment urged the county to enact a moratorium. Randolph, in an interview after the meeting, was more measured in describing his stance. If you're really in a situation where you don't have the staff and you don't have the resources, I totally get the needs about time, Randolph said. If you go the moratorium route just to sort of make people feel better or to buy some time just for the sake of buying time, I don't think that is good public policy. In the case of Lee County, we've got experienced professional planners and community development folks that have been doing this for a very long time, he said. I have a lot of confidence that we're prepared to make judgments about whether or not a project would be a good fit for us. Rainey said in an interview that Lee County isn't currently prepared for a data center. I was asked to come and speak about the legality of moratoria and why a moratorium on data centers might be a good fit for a county like Lee, Rainey said. Lee County's local government ordinances just don't contemplate this type of development. So my whole point was that it makes sense to pause and take the time to develop ordinances that are adequately proactive. Kirk Smith, chair of the Lee County Board of Commissioners, said a moratorium is unnecessary. The moratorium demanded by the activists does not take into consideration the fact that the Joint Planning Commission, which is the City of Sanford, the Town of Broadway, and Lee County, are currently working on a draft unified development ordinance addressing data centers, Smith wrote in an email as he declined an interview. Since December, we've been researching, discussing, and developing best practices involving data centers. I failed to see the rush for a moratorium, knowing that it will have a draft ordinance to present to the public in April. The draft ordinance sent to Triangle Business Journal by Smith defines data centers broadly, including cryptocurrency mining, and sets strict standards on setbacks, noise, water, and energy use, building design and environmental impacts, along with detailed review and permitting requirements. It also requires infrastructure capacity verification and ongoing compliance measures to limit impacts on nearby properties and public resources. The next Lee County Board of Commissioners meeting is April 6th. What's next in Chatham County? Jennifer Scott, a land use attorney who served a 3-year stint on the Chatham County Planning Board more than 20 years ago, said she's generally against development moratoria. In the case of data centers, though, Scott said, it's probably not a bad idea to have this pause. I think that it's not unwise to take a minute and figure out how you're going to address it, said Scott, general counsel for local developer Windjam Companies and an attorney with the Shipman and Wright law firm. But I do think with any moratorium, it's crucial that the county take the upcoming year, get the work done, and be prepared to deal with this instead of to keep extending. That sense of urgency to pause but not stall is exactly what developers like Bradley say is missing from the current approach. While some officials and attorneys argue a temporary moratorium can create space to craft thoughtful rules, Bradley contends the groundwork has already been laid with years of planning, investment, and site preparation already underway in anticipation of projects like his. For Bradley, the concern isn't just about timing, it's about certainty. A prolonged or unnecessary pause, he said, risks undermining projects that have been in motion long before the recent surge in public attention, raising broader questions about how counties balance evolving land use policies with the expectations of developers who have already committed significant time and capital. In Chatham County, he argues, data center regulation didn't really require a moratorium. The second part of our cover story on the data center arms race is entitled AI Fuels Billion-Dollar Bets and Bubble Worries. The growth of artificial intelligence is expected to drive trillions in data center projects. And this article is written by Joshua Mann. The artificial intelligence boom has had wide-ranging impacts on the economy, including the red-hot demand for data centers with which to train and run the software underlying the technology. More than $61 billion flowed through data center deals worldwide during the first 11 months of 2025, with the U.S. accounting for the largest portion of that capital, according to an S&P Global report. Other companies are building their own assets. The S&P report projects North America data center square footage to grow 20% annually over the next 5 years, about double the rate of the prior 5-year period. The cost to build a data center has also surged. Those two factors, more expensive construction and a greater number of projects, have launched the financial stakes of the industry to incredible levels. About $77.7 billion in data center projects started in the U.S. in 2025, up 190% from the prior year, according to a Construct Connect report. However, the AI sector fueling the soaring demand is still in its early stages, and how that industry grows could have major ramifications for the bets being made in the real estate sector. Some experts see too much momentum behind AI to be worried, while others urge caution. Mark Rose, CEO of commercial real estate services firm Avison Young, Inc., said he's concerned by the deluge of investments in the space. However, some of that fervor has moderated because of a limited availability of power. While the future for the AI sector is big and exciting, it's still unknown, Rose said, adding, I worry very much that we don't learn our lessons That has not ended well for this industry when you piled into one particular asset. Many in the commercial real estate sector see too much momentum behind AI for a reversal of fortune. I think AI is here to stay, said Allie Greenwood, executive director in Cushman & Wakefield, Inc.'s Global Data Center Advisory Group. I think it would be extremely challenging to hamper its growth and its demand now that the horse has left the stable. Venture capitalists, corporations, and governments are all pouring a tremendous amount of money into the AI business, lending further staying power to the technology, she said. On top of that, customers are leasing data center capacity that won't even come online for 3 to 4 years, she said. A CBRE report found a record 1.4% vacancy in primary data center markets by the end of 2025, despite a 32% increase in supply. Following the pandemic, a flurry of investments in the life sciences sector prompted a surge in biotech projects, which are ultimately met with low demand. Howard Wang, an associate for National Data Center Solutions at Avison Young, said he doesn't see that story playing out in the data center sector. He said there's too much demand for data centers for there to be a credible risk to building them at such an intense pace. He does see some risk on the land side. Before investors wouldn't close on land for a data center before they had an operator in mind, he said. But now it's like everyone is afraid of missing out, so they're buying land before it's fully secured with an operator, Huang said. It's like you're buying a shovel before you know where the gold is, and of course that is a risk. However, the land represents a shrinking portion of the cost of a data center given the rising cost of the technological component, he said. Not everyone thinks demand for AI data centers is ironclad. IBM CEO Arvind Krishna told the Decoder podcast that there's no way the amount of money going into data centers makes sense. Imad Akand, founding CEO of Mercury Technology, Inc., believes there's a bubble in AI, although he doesn't think it's going to pop in 2026. He told the San Francisco Business Times, a particular concern is the money being spent on infrastructure, he said. The rapid changes of the AI sector may end up working against data centers, said Rob Enderle, principal analyst for tech advisory firm Enderle Group. For instance, Amazon decreased the reported lifespan of the chips in some of its servers from 6 years to 5 due to the increasing rate of change in AI technology. Others have clocked the lifespan of a cutting-edge chip between 1 to 3 years due to competition from new generation chips. There is a reasonable chance that by the time the data center is done, enough of the underlying conditions will have changed so that the data center will either be obsolete or be borderline obsolete, he said. I don't think AI is going to fail. I just don't think we know what its final form is going to be yet. It's also unclear whether companies are going to want to run AI tools remotely long term. He believes the companies are going to want more control over the tools they use, eventually shifting some of the processing demands to an on-premises assets. There's also a push to have data centers closer to the end users rather than in large clusters, he said. What if expectations aren't met? So what happens if something goes wrong, if there's a bubble and it bursts, or less dramatically, if the company's bullish on AI or overestimating the scale or timeline for hyperscale data center demand? If that happens, a ton of money has been put into something you can't use and may have a certain amount of cost to wind down. Like any focus-built factory, if the factory is no longer viable, it goes from being an asset to a liability, Enderle said. S&P analysts noted that there's been a shift in recent months from equity financing to credit financing in the sector, moving some of the risk beyond equity investors. Kristen Vosmeyer, managing director of data center work for Dynamics at Jones Lang LaSalle, Inc., said it isn't a boom or bust binary. Investors might fail to take home the returns they expect, but they have mitigating options, he said. AI is another layer, albeit the fastest growing layer, on top of already proven applications for data centers, he said. Even if one segment takes a dip, there's still a shortage of data center capacity over the next 5 to 20 years, he said. The risk underwriters are talking about today isn't that a facility might go unutilized. It's how a given data center might be redeveloped or redeployed if a particular user can't follow through on their commitments, he said. There's plenty of demand long-term to offset any immediate pullback, Cushman & Wakefield's Greenwood said. compared to the office sector, for instance, which saw large-scale vacancy when the pandemic disrupted demand. I don't think that's possible here because of how far out we have pre-leasing occurring, he said. Enderle is still skeptical that demand from more traditional data center segments could absorb the AI capacity being built, however. That's certainly a possibility, but that's not where the effort is, Enderle said. It's kind of like saying we're developing a different kind of race car, but if the technology doesn't work out, we can just pivot back to a regular race car. That only works if people want a regular race car. We have time for a few random articles here before we wrap up. Here's one for all the Buc-ee's fans out there. Buc-ee's expects to launch more stores in North Carolina. Buc-ee's, the gas station and convenience store phenom, isn't going to stop at Mebane when it comes to its expansion in North Carolina. The question is, where will the Texas-based company look next in the state, and could the Greater Triangle region be included on the map of potential locations? Buc-ee's is building its first North Carolina store off Interstate 4085 on the Alamance County side of Mebane, with the travel center expected to open in late 2027. During a Triad Business Journal event March 12th, Stan Beard, director of real estate development for Buc-ee's, said we still have more stores in North Carolina. That is economic development leaders across the state champing at the bit to land one of the travel centers, as new Buc-ee's locations often fuel more development and investments. In Johnston County, there have been conversations about the possibility of Buc-ee's locating along I-95. Kevin Doherty, president of Adventure Development and the visionary behind the Eastfield Crossing project, said Buc-ee's representatives explored the area several years ago. The 3-million-square-foot Eastfield development sits near the intersection of Interstate 95, I-42, and U.S. 70, Doherty said. He spoke with broker representatives of the company roughly 3 or 4 years ago. But ultimately, he said, what they needed and what we had didn't really match up. Even so, he believes the company's eventual expansion in the state will likely include eastern North Carolina. I would expect they're going to land somewhere down on I-95 at some point, Doherty said. Buc-ee's declined to comment for this story. Another potential site lies farther south along I-95. Buc-ee's is a retail unicorn that offers impressively high-paying positions from the ground up, said Stephen Barrington, Harnett County's Economic Development Director. We believe most communities would love to have a Buc-ee's in their backyard. Barrington said the county has partnered with Retail Strategies based out of Birmingham, Alabama, to identify retail growth opportunities. We have multiple locations across the county that have demand for top-tier shopping centers, Barrington said. One potential contender could be the Dunn area in Harnett County, which sits along I-95 and Highway 421, a location that offers access to both north, south, and east-west traffic. That type of intersection is exactly what Buc-ee's tends to look for when selecting new sites, according to Jeff Lennard, Vice President of Strategic Industry Initiatives at the National Association of Convenience Stores. A Beaufort hotel has sold for $7.5 million to investors. Ben Tobin writes on this story. Yet another hotel along the North Carolina coast has been scooped up for millions of dollars. Inlet Inn Crystal Coast LLC purchased the roughly 40-year-old Inlet Inn at 601 Front Street in Beaufort for $7.5 million, according to Carteret County deed records filed in March. The hotel has 36 rooms, most with a private waterfront porch and rocking chairs. The LLC lists a Jeff Wilson of Greenville and a John Mills of Raleigh as managers, according to NC Secretary of State filings. Mills and Wilson did not respond to requests seeking comment. There are principals at Macaulay Ventures, which says on its website that it is looking for properties where we can add value to the people, places, investors, and communities we serve. The purchase adds to a wave of hospitality investments at the coast as tourism and in-migration continue to boost demand for lodging in waterfront communities. Coastal towns like Beaufort have increasingly attracted buyers looking to capitalize on steady visitor traffic, with smaller boutique hotels and waterfront properties drawing particular interest from investors seeking assets in high-demand vacation markets. In February, for example, the Seafoam Motel in Nag's Head was sold for $5.6 million. The hotel opened in 1948. And in more hotel news, Kate Tracy tells us about an Indiana firm acquiring the Raleigh Sheraton. A downtown Raleigh hotel that's one of the largest in the region has been sold, with the new owners planning a sweeping remake of the property to convert it to an elite hospitality brand. The Sheraton Raleigh Hotel at 421 South Salisbury Street sold for $27.75 million on March 27th. According to Wake County deed records, the buyer is White Lodging, an Indiana-based hotel development ownership and management company. White Lodging intends to transform the hotel into a Westin and renovate its guest rooms, amenities, and public areas. The new owner will also add more meeting space and food and beverage options. The renovation will start in early 2027. It will be the second Westin hotel in Raleigh. The area's first Westin opened in Briar Creek in 2023. This hotel provides an exciting opportunity to enhance the quality of the hotel with an expanded convention center in the works and growing leisure demand, Jean-Luc Baron, president and CEO at White Lodging, said in a press release. The project adds to the flurry of hotel developments in the downtown area, including plans for a 600-room Omni Hotel on Fayetteville Street across from the Raleigh Convention Center and the Martin Marietta Center for the Performing Arts. City officials have been pushing for more hotel rooms downtown to support the region's growing tourism industry and to lure larger corporate events as part of the expansion of the convention center. Founded by Bruce White in 1985, White Lodging lists more than 60 hotels across the country on its website, including the JW Marriott in Charlotte. The Sheraton is the first foray into the Raleigh market. The seller is Raleigh Hotel 29 Owner LLC, which lists the Maryland address of PM Hotel Group, according to North Carolina Secretary of State records. PM Hotel Group Chairman Dave Pollan signed the deed. Built in 1981, the 249,980 square foot hotel has 353 rooms, and sits on a 0.64 acre lot. The hotel is the third largest in the triangle, based on number of rooms behind the Raleigh Marriott, City Center Hotel, and the Raleigh Marriott Crabtree Valley. The restaurant Jimmy V's Osteria and Bar is located in the hotel. The total assessed value of the hotel is $59.75 million, according to Wake County records. It last sold in 2015 for $47.85 million. As of September 2025, its appraised value was $51 million, according to loan documents. The hotel's loan transferred to special servicing in August 2025 due to imminent monetary default, according to loan documents. As of November, the hotel's occupancy was 65.4%, with an average daily rate of $167.95 and revenue per available room of $109.90, according to loan documents. 2025 revenue was $19.3 million, down from 2024 revenue of $20.9 million, according to loan documents. The hotel landed on a CMBS watch list in March 2020 and was 60 days late on loan payments, citing COVID-19-related hardships. Its 2020 and 2021 revenue dropped to $7 million and $11.5 million, respectively, down from 2019 revenue of $21 million, according to loan documents. As part of a civil judgment, Wake County Superior Court ordered the hotel to pay the North Carolina Department of Revenue in December. The hotel owes $107,449 as of March 30th. And for those folks that have been around here a while, that hotel used to be a Radisson. In the residential space, Downtown South plans move forward. Kaylee Thompson is the writer of this story. Work on the Downtown South project in Raleigh is progressing as Kane Realty Corp advances its ambitious plan to build a gateway district near the core of the city. The real estate developer has filed a subdivision plan with the City of Raleigh for 78 acres where Interstate 40 meets South Saunders Street south of downtown. The subdivision plan is the first step of the site review process with the city. The developer would follow this submittal with its plans, with site plans. The subdivision plan proposes to split the property at 2400 South Saunders Street, 558 Granite Street, and 498 Carolina Pines Avenue into 11 open lots separated into three phases. In all, 50 acres of the property will be developed. The first phase would be seven lots totaling 28 acres along Interstate 40 and South Saunders Street. Phase 2 would be three lots totaling 19 acres, while the third phase would be one lot just shy of 2 acres. In the plan, the to-be-constructed streets are labeled as multifamily streets, which is defined by the city as strictly for residential development built as apartments and townhomes. There's no other information in the plans about specific building types and uses, including no mention of a stadium for the property. A spokesperson for Kane Realty said the demand for different types of housing in the area is what drove the company to focus on residential first. The company didn't share specific details of this project, but said it would be a multi-phase residential-focused development. Kane Realty Chairman John Kane previously told Triangle Business Journal that construction on the first phase of Downtown South could potentially start by the end of this year. The site is zoned 20 stories through the properties on Granite Street and Carolina Pines Avenue are restricted to 12 stories. Conditions for this portion of Interstate 40 and South Saunders Street state that the uses cannot be more than 500,000 square feet of office, 50,000 square feet of retail, and 900 residential units. Previous announcements from Kane Realty said the first phase of Downtown South, an area that includes more than the subdivision plan covers, would have 535,000 square feet of office space, 60,000 square feet of retail, 1,000 multifamily units, a 3,500-seat concert venue, and a 180-room hotel. Downtown South was unveiled in 2019, but was delayed for years due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the shutdown in the office market, slowdown in the office market, and tighter financial markets for commercial real estate. The subdivision plan is only a small slice of Downtown South and is likely the residential portion of Phase 1. Since financing is still difficult to acquire for office projects, including pre-leasing requirements of 50% or higher, it makes sense that Kane Realty would start with multifamily. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods Real Estate Investment Trust is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.